Okay, another Apple event in the bag, pretty much right down the middle as far as what everyone was expecting, except for the brand new hardware product that everyone was reporting by the end that did not appear at all. So we won't talk about that. But otherwise, the event, I would say, pretty much met expectations for all of the products that were announced. There were a few surprises, particularly pricing surprises, which I think is good news. All of them were, unlike the last event, all of the pricing surprises were good surprises. And it started off with services, which I think everybody expected. We got details on the two new services launching this fall, pricing and timing details for the first time. And I guess it makes sense to start there. With Apple Arcade. So as previously reported, the Apple Arcade subscription will cost $4.99 a month. There will be a 1 month free trial, and it will be available on September 19th, which is not only very soon, but it's also the day before all the new devices ship. So that's going to be a pretty exciting week for Apple fans. But other than that, I don't think there's that much to say about Apple Arcade. We pretty much got the preview when it was announced last time. So do you have anything more to add on Apple Arcade?
Only that what I'm excited about with Apple Arcade is the idea that iOS might get some good, nice, full-featured games. And that is unfortunately not what we saw with the demo, which was Frogger and Endless Runner type mobile games that looked not great. So I'm assuming that there's some really good stuff coming to this subscription service. Unfortunately, I did not see it today. I would have loved to have seen like a really cool big game that I would not have expected coming to the iPhone on the iPhone. But yeah, we got Frogger and an underwater side-scrolling game. That looked cool, but nothing massively impressive. So I will wait to see the full list.
We also got a playable music video, Drew. Don't you want to play a music video?
That is true. That is true. We did get that. And so, yeah, I mean, having Konami come out and demo Frogger is not necessarily the best way to sell gamers on this service, but I'm assuming that there were reasons that they did that and that there's some cool stuff coming down the line.
Probably that they're not really overly concerned with selling it to hardcore gamers yet, given that there are still going to be standalone titles available on the App Store. And that was one of the things that I actually was slightly boggled by. I mean, maybe I'm missing this because I'm not on the betas, but I don't think that Apple Arcade has been included in any of the betas shipped to public or developers.
There's just a tab, and that tab says, coming soon, notify me.
Gotcha. So that was the thing I saw. I was like, okay, there's games and arcade now. Two different tabs. They are not even next to each other.
No.
And so that might be confusing to some people, but I guess if you're not a subscriber to Arcade, it will just tell you have to pay for this and then everybody will leave. I don't know. Maybe it is just going to be a service for casual games, but we'll find out in a couple weeks. And also it's free for a month, so can't hurt to try, I guess.
Right.
But I think that's enough for Apple Arcade. The thing that people were really waiting for in terms of services at this event was the Apple TV Plus availability and pricing. We didn't see any new content. We saw an extended trailer for C, the future dystopia where no people can see, starring Jason Momoa, which I think a lot of people are... That trailer certainly looked watchable to me. I think that show will be very cool. The mosaic for what's coming at launch only showed 12 shows, and I think a lot of people have been skeptical about this service having enough content at launch to be worth the price. And if it's only 12 shows, I mean, if it's 12 shows and they're all really good, like that's a good enough start. But it really all came down to what is it going to cost? So Apple finally told us. November 1st is when, as they said, the first shows will be available and more will be added every month. We don't know if it's all 12 of those shows are the first shows or if it's just going to be three shows. It is going to be available in over 100 countries. And the big number is that it's only going to cost $4.99 a month. And not only that, but when you buy new Apple devices, I think they only listed ones that you can watch videos on, so like iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs, and maybe Macs, I don't remember. They give you a year free of Apple TV Plus when you buy one. So I assume what that means is everyone who's buying a new phone this year is going to get Apple TV Plus free for a year.
Right.
And you know, every other device too. So that certainly makes it worth checking out, and I guess they hope that we'll all stick with it after that. And it probably also means they're not going to raise the price above $5 for a year. So that's great. I mean, at least a year. Like, it would be weird for that free trial to end and then have them go, psych, it's $10 now to everybody who had it for free. So I think we can expect this $5 price point for a while. And that comes in lower than Disney, which it had better because Disney's got everything.
Right.
You know, I think that's great. I'm going to watch these shows. What do you think of the Apple TV Plus news?
Yeah, I'm just bored by this whole video streaming war that's going on. I mean, it's fine. It's good for us. I'm glad that this isn't going to cost $10 a month and have no free trial. That's great. I'm very happy about it. At the same time, I feel like I just want to wait for the dust to settle and see where all these platforms are in like 5 years. And until then, we'll get free trials and weird price points and everyone competing and new shows. And it just is the state of video streaming services right now. But I mean, yeah, I'm excited for the like talk show one.
Yeah.
With a couple of really amazing stars in it. So, I mean, I'll watch that. That'll be great. But I don't think we can really say much about like the staying power of Apple TV Plus.
No.
Until several years go by and we see how this goes.
I think one thing we can say at this point, though, unfortunately for everyone, is that it's looking less and less like there's going to be any kind of bundle pricing for any of these new Apple services. When the Apple TV price hit at $5, I knew that meant there was not going to be a bundle.
Yeah.
Like I because there are two Apple News Plus and Music are both $10 and the other two are now $5, and that doesn't seem like something Apple's going to squeeze down on. If anything, they're just going to raise the price for Apple TV Plus after a few years.
John, I want Apple Books Plus. Give me Apple Books Plus. That's what I want.
What is that? A subscription? Like you get the
yes.
books for a limited period of time?
It's Kindle Unlimited, but good.
Yeah, well, who knows? We'll see. And maybe there's more. I don't know what's come of that Oprah thing. Remember when they, at WWDC, wasn't that at WWDC?
Oh, yeah. That kind of was Books Plus, wasn't it? In its own weird way.
Yeah, but they didn't announce anything. Mm-hmm. And so they said Oprah Book Club was coming. I think all they really meant by that is it's a curated section of the store or something. But I vaguely remember something about live events and I don't know. I think that they should definitely do more around books, especially in terms of social stuff. Like Goodreads is so terrible. And, you know, Apple Music has like following and recommendations from followers. I really think they should add that to books, but that should not be a paid service. The Apple Books Plus idea of like subscription to limited time rental of books and audiobooks. Yeah. See, especially since audiobooks are so expensive on Apple Books. I really think that's we need that. Maybe next year.
Yeah, maybe next year.
There was a lot of hardware at this event. And I don't think a lot of people were expecting iPad announcements, except Mark Gurman and people who read Mark Gurman. But I think I'm very excited about this announcement, which is the update to the base model iPad, the one just called iPad. Greg Joswiak presented the iPad. He said it was the most popular model. He also said 60% of people who buy it, it's their first iPad. So it's sort of an important entry point into the ecosystem. It's had that classic 9.7-inch screen size that iPads have had since the first one came out. And with the announcement of today's seventh generation iPad, that screen size has been retired. There's no longer a 9.7-inch iPad. The new base model iPad is 10.2 inches. So it has a slightly smaller bezel, but it still has sort of the late recent iPad look, including Touch ID home button. But it's got a slightly larger screen. It's got an A10 Fusion chip. And that makes it, and this was an interesting comparison, 2 times faster and 3 times more pixels than the top selling PC laptop, which I think is an indication of a turning point in how this iPad is being marketed, which I'll get to at sort of the end of this description. But it also has a smart connector, so it works with the full size smart keyboard, which is the first time the base model iPad has supported the keyboard, I'm pretty sure.
Which is cool.
Yeah, that's great. It's a story about it being the story that they told about this device is that it's the optimal entry-level iPad for iPad OS. They sort of needed to update the thing so that the new, like, higher productivity, more powerful features of iPad OS would be better supported by this device. That involved a little bit of a demo of what's coming in iPad OS, which included the floating keyboard, which people applauded for, which made me feel like they haven't really been paying attention to the news. So I don't understand how they were invited to the press event, but good for them. They also demoed reading stuff off a thumb drive, which at that point made it seem like, duh, like this is an everybody feature. Like this isn't just something pro photographers need. Like all kinds of people who have crappy laptops and are good iPad customers also have thumb drives. So I'm very glad that that feature is coming. And finally, this is the first 100% recycled aluminum iPad. So good for Apple. So this repositioning that I'm talking about, this is the $329 iPad, which is $299 for education. This was introduced at the education focused event a year or more ago. Remember, like the first time they hit that $329 price point, they were doing so in the guise of this is the iPad for education use. And in the time since then, people have, a lot of press people, and including Fraser Spears, who's sort of like the expert on deploying iPads in schools, have all sort of decided that Chromebooks have taken over the education market. They're just a better thing to deploy for schools than iPads are. And that may be true. Even though $300 for this device is pretty great, like you can still do way better than that. And Google apps and, you know, like all that stuff is just probably way easier to deal with in education. But this model was presented in comparison to the top selling PC laptop, which I sort of felt like was an indication that Apple is pivoting it slightly to be positioned to replace a traditional personal computer for normal people. And like that's not the first time they've said that about the iPad, but they've managed to wiggle this iPad down into a price point and, more importantly, a combination of price and feature set that just makes it a complete no-brainer for somebody who would have a laptop, you know, like from any generation, you know, any age or experience with computers. It makes it absolute no-brainer for them to get this instead of a PC. And I think that that's what they're saying now. It's the everyone iPad. And I think it's a fantastic one. It's not for us, but it's going to really bring a lot of people into the iPad, I think.
Yeah, there are certain times where I think that it's been challenging to recommend just a normal iPad to people who really do want to make it like their primary computer. Because really, I think that the thing that has kept it apart up until this point has been the lack of a keyboard, because most people want a keyboard, and managing a Bluetooth keyboard and figuring out how to pair it and all of that stuff can be challenging. And so just giving it a keyboard, I feel like, goes a long way towards making this a very easy sell as the primary computer for a lot of people, including younger people that have no interest in having a traditional PC. So, yep, it's a great iPad. I think a lot of people will buy it. It's not me, because it has a button, and I don't want a button.
Yep,
but that's why they make the pros. Yeah, and I'll keep buying those.
So, next is the segment that I was most excited about and which you didn't know was coming, which is the Apple Watch Series 5.
I somehow missed completely the idea that there was going to be new Apple Watch hardware. I had heard rumors of like new materials and that type of thing, but I just assumed that this was still a ways out and we were going to see it in the spring. So to have a new Apple Watch is pretty cool. I'm actually not sure if I'm sold on this one, but it's a great Apple Watch.
Well, I'm definitely sold on it because I hung on to the Series 3. And as much as I love the Series 3, it is running slow and it is very small. And I am ready for the upgrade to what is probably the device I use the most, in that it's on me at all times, and I'm sort of managing everything from there. It's really become the thing I think of as the home device more so than the phone. And so one thing that I have been waiting for before upgrading is an always on display, which we got. It is really well implemented. I was really wondering how they were going to do this. I was wondering if it was just going to be that low power mode time, just like the little time in the corner, like it already has when you switch to low power mode, because I was wondering how are they going to get the battery life out of this thing if the screen's always on. And what they've done is, first of all, completely changed the display. They have created a variable refresh rate screen so that it can go down to 1 hertz, which of course is way more power efficient. And it's combined with like a new display driver and an ambient light sensor to sort of determine what the best energy configuration of the display is at any time. And that has managed to get it down to what they said was the same all day 18 hour battery life. And I don't have battery life problems with my watch, really. So having the same battery life and having a screen that I can look at without raising my wrist in a cartoonish way, I'm really excited about that. And so what they did, rather than just implement that little corner time, they have new modes for all of the faces, as well as workout metrics that are that have like fewer pixels lit up and are lower brightness. So you can still see them, and then they sort of like light up. They like illuminate more when you raise your wrist to full brightness, and it even shows complications, which I'm so stoked about. This is the perfect implementation of this, I think, because I don't even think that having it fully blasting light all the time, even if they could do it with a battery, I don't think that would be as good of an experience. I like that it's showing information, but it's dim, and then when you raise it to look at it, it lights up. So I think they really nailed that.
Yeah, the idea of an always-on Apple Watch screen is great. It should have been there from the beginning. Obviously, they would have made it there from the beginning if they could have. So it's a much-needed change for the Apple Watch as a whole. I think that it's actually going to be jarring once I get a always-on Apple Watch, because I'm so used to the feeling of needing to conserve battery on that little display. I do a thing like when I look at it and I see a notification or whatever, I then cover it with my hand to turn the screen off immediately. Not necessarily because I have battery issues. It always lasts all day, but it just is like a thing. I know that it doesn't have forever and that the screen is bright and it needs to be off. So I turn it off. And I think that watching, like just glancing from the side of my field of vision to see that the screen is always on is going to freak me out for a while. But that being said, it's really cool. It seemed like the way that they're doing this, did you just mention this? I got a text message, so I need to obviously cut this out. But it seems like the way that they're doing this is by getting rid of the seconds hand on all of the watch faces.
Oh, I didn't notice that. No, I didn't.
Yeah. So it seems like, you know, having it refresh every second is something that's far too challenging. I don't know what the actual refresh rate is going to be, but now all of the second hands are gone. And I don't know if that means that it will like fade into view or something. That was just what it seemed like from the mosaic of Apple Watch faces that they showed dimming. So it seems like it's a great trade-off. I think that that's totally smart. It makes a lot of sense, and it's going to sell some watches. I felt like as I was watching my Twitter feed scroll by, that people were like totally sold on this.
Yep.
And it comes in some really nice new finishes. I've always been a huge fan of the ceramic Apple Watch. I've not had one because they're very expensive, and I would imagine that this one will continue to be very expensive, but that looks awesome in this really nice white finish. And then they're using a new titanium dark and light finish. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
That also looks really good. And it's a dope watch. I don't know if I'll get one because I have the last version and it's fine. And I have over the years trained myself to not care about the watch face not being on all the time. So whenever I do get one, it'll be very pleasant to not have to worry about that anymore. But it doesn't hinder me so badly that I need to go out and get a new watch right now.
Yep. So there are a couple other little features. It has a built-in compass now, which I think is really welcome because now you can tell which direction you're facing in maps. There's also a compass complication, which is super hardcore. But I do actually have a face. I use that Explorer face. It's the last face I have, and it's something that I've used when I only have my watch and I'm going hiking or something like that. And I sort of think of it as my adventure face, and I would put a compass on that, I guess. But then there's also a compass app, which has your latitude, longitude, elevation, and incline, which is cool for people who are nerdy about that sort of thing. And it's open to developers, which is great. So like apps for hiking trails or skiing or whatever it is can incorporate the compass. And then they also added a new safety feature, as they tend to do, which is that every cellular watch now has international emergency calling built in, which is awesome. That's like they showed another one of those videos beforehand. I thought we could skip it because it's not exactly news, but they showed another video of Apple Watch saving tons and tons of people's lives or changing their lives. And it was really powerful. And everybody who hates these keynotes should be forced to watch those videos so that they understand why there is objectively good stuff happening here. Think about the next layer of life saving that's going to add now that you can call emergency services in like 100 countries with your watch without even having to know how. You just click the button over and over again. You don't have to know what number it is in that country. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's really cool.
But all of the headline stuff for me was about the materials, and the existence of ceramic and titanium watches this time was what got me really, really sure that I was going to get a new one. And I am, in fact, I'm going to do it right now on the show.
Yeah. Which one do you want?
So here's what I found. The Apple Store is back up, and I have scrolled way, way, way down, the Apple Watch page, to the section called Apple Watch Edition Series 5, because...
Oh, Lord. It's still called an edition, huh?
The titanium and ceramic models are both called edition. And my intention is, I'll just be fully transparent, because I'm gonna talk you through all of this, because we don't have the pricing data on these models. They didn't say it in the keynote, so I'm going to announce it here live. The titanium model is what I want, the light-colored titanium model. The built-in configurations come with sport loops. There's a sport loop one and a leather loop one. The leather loop is my favorite band, so I'm afraid I'm going to have to get another one of those.
Okay.
And the titanium case with sport loops starts at $799, and the ceramic case with a sport loop is $1,299.
Oof.
And the titanium with leather loop is $899. And the white ceramic case with leather loop is $1,399. And they have a new feature, which they announced at the end, which I don't really understand why they did that. But there's a new feature of retail that is now here, where you can choose, you can mix and match whatever band and case you like. Now you don't have to get one of the pre-designed Apple ones, but I think I like the leather loop in black. I have the original one in black. They've apparently just relaunched it in black, and my original one's a little beat up, so I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to get a medium band, and I'm not going to get Apple Care, and I'm going to, let's see. Okay. Trade in. So this is what I really wanted to know. I can trade in my Apple Watch Series 3 with GPS and, cellular, and everything's in good shape. Yes, yes, yes. So I get a $60 trade in.
Oh,
which is a little rough, but okay.
Yeah.
I'll take it though. I'll take it. And I'm going to add to bag, and this is crazy that I'm doing this, but I think I'm ready to invest this much in Apple Watch at this point. It's like my favorite device, and I am. I was going to get a steel model, but I think those are too shiny. Here we go. Buy with Apple Pay. I'm gonna do it right now. I'm really glad to have an Apple Card.
Yeah.
Because I'm gonna get a lot of money back here. And there we go. I am now an Apple Watch Edition owner.
Boom. I do appreciate this new way of letting you choose every single bit of it, because that's always been a bit of an annoying thing. I had to buy the same band that I already had again, just because I didn't want to spend a bunch of money on a first party Apple band. So this is dope. I really like it a lot. I think it's going to be really cool in the stores to be able to mix and match and pick whatever you want and walk out with it. And like I said, this is going to be a really good watch. And if of all the people in the world that I know that care about the Apple Watch, I think you are number one. So getting a nice, heavy, good-feeling edition version of the watch fits you and the life you live. So best of luck.
I think that's true. I also have skipped a generation every time. So
exactly. This
is kind of like just buying it 2 years in a row, which I've never done.
Exactly. And I will get the next one. So next year at this time, we will do the same thing, but it'll be my Apple Pay, not yours.
Yes. But they are keeping the Series 3 in the line, which is cool. And it starts at $199, which is really cool. And I feel really bad for Fitbit investors.
Yeah, that's a great thing, because I feel like the Apple Watch is in this precarious position that they will continuously just advance forward until everyone's wearing one of these things.
Yep.
But I feel like there's a lot of people that would like an Apple Watch, but are not going to wear it all the time, or at least have no intention of wearing it all the time, and see it as very much a novelty that isn't worth a lot of their money. So the cheaper that they can get older versions that are still very, very functional, the better off they're going to be, because I think that a lot of people will end up impulse buying this or giving it to somebody as a Christmas gift, but no one's going to do that for an expensive one. And I feel like the watch is just personal enough that it almost feels like a waste of money when people buy a last generation Apple Watch that still feels expensive.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't understand why you would do this, but I 100% understand why someone would buy a Series 3 for this price. So it's a great move. I think it's going to sell a lot.
So again, pricing info that is lowering the barrier to entry. And that is not the last of those that we're going to talk about. Hi, internet friends. It's John here. Internet Friends is brought to you by my work at Ablaze Interactions, where I solve communication problems for clients who work to repair our world. I can help with information architecture to transform your website, content strategy to tell the right story and reach the right audience, and writing and editing to find the authentic voice of your company or organization, your product, or your idea. Ablaze Interactions has consulted for world-renowned events, political candidates, law firms, nonprofits, and great apps on the App Store. Light up your ideas. Go to ablaze.co and let me know if you're interested in working together. As is befitting a September event, the final product to be revealed in the show was iPhone, and there were two iPhone lines, just like last year. They've had a slight naming reconfiguration, but really, I think the positioning is the same. But the thing that was formerly known as the 10R, they've dropped the X, they've dropped the 10 branding, which at good riddance, and they've simplified iPhone branding in a way that I think makes perfect sense for Apple where it is right now, and they've gone to 11. I'm a little worried about where the numbers thing is going.
Me too.
I have a theory about that. So we're at iPhone 11 now. Next year is when we can expect the first 5G iPhones. And I think we should probably expect those to be called iPhone 12 because they're not quite going to be at the point at which the whole line can be like OLED edge to edge, no notch, like the platonic ideal of the iPhone, you know, but you can imagine them getting there by 2021.
Definitely.
And I have a feeling that the first like complete platonic ideal iPhone with like nothing but screen is when they're going to drop the numbers. And that would be 13, which would be the first like truly humiliating number. So I think,
right.
I think that we're at the second to last number year, and it makes sense that they've gone back to it.
Well, do you think that we're going to get an 11S next year, or do you think it'll just be a 12?
No, I think that next year is going to be the iPhone 12, and I think that that's because the 5G thing is going to be a huge deal, and I bet there's going to be like a full case redesign to match that.
Just saying, they have a couple of years before they have several years before they have to worry about 13 if they keep the naming scheme they've had going.
Well, yeah, that's a good point, but I think that that this generation may be somewhat of a compromise, the existence of this generation. Like, I think they would have gone to 5G this year if it had been possible, given the roadmap being laid out many, many years in advance. You know, like other manufacturers got to 5G already, and the networks aren't ready. You know, like none of 5G is really ready. But I bet they had to stretch it out a year. And I don't think these iPhones are going to sell that well. I'll just be honest. But they have they have priced them to match, and maybe that will make a difference. So they priced one of them that way anyway. So last year they had this 10R, which was like, what is an R? It's like one letter before S, and it's in between them in size, and it seems perfectly nice, but it has like worse technologies in certain ways. It was confusing what that iPhone was positioned to do, and it was $750, which still felt like a fairly pricey iPhone. But it turned out to be the most popular one. It sold really, really well. I think trade-ins made a big difference as far as that goes. And they also promoted it really heavily at the beginning of the cycle, with like all kinds of deals. So now they've clarified the position of that phone. It is now called the iPhone 11. It is the same like in-between size. And it comes in multiple colors. There are new colors this year. There is no blue, which I'm angry about. But they've added a purple and green color that are both really nice. And the camera system has gone to a dual lens system. They also got Dolby Atmos sound, so like really good sound for a phone. It's a next generation processor, all that stuff. Like they demonstrated this phone with crazy games. But of course, really at this point, iPhone news is always about the camera. And they've changed the camera story a little bit, basically what they've done is, since last year was a single lens on the 10R and a dual lens system on the 10S, which had a wide angle lens and a telephoto lens. So it was 1X and 2X last year. This year, the dual camera system on the iPhone 11 is wide and ultra wide. It has 120 degree field of view. So the story is not 1X and 2X anymore. Now it's 1X and 0.5X. And just for me, I think that makes a lot more sense in a lot of the situations. But you're the photographer. Tell me about the significance of this shift.
Yeah, in a way, I'm a little disappointed. I will not be getting this phone. I will be getting the phone with all of the cameras. But I think that telephoto lenses make a lot of sense for people to use because it's a more flattering lens for portraits. But I completely understand why they're doing this, because they understand that people that are going to take portraits will be doing it in ways that Apple can help them with. But what people really want to do that Apple could not help them with before was take photos in incredibly low light situations and take video that is like really, really good looking. And having a wide angle for those purposes makes a lot more sense than the telephoto lens. They introduced this really great new low light feature that I appreciate because it actually makes things look like they're still at night. I have hated all of the low light features that we've seen from Apple's competitors so far, because I just feel like, you just turned the exposure up. Like it doesn't look that good to me. It looks like now we're no longer taking a night photo. We're taking a photo in the most brightly lit room imaginable. And that's not what you want that's not what you're seeing with your eye. Whereas Apple's version of low light photography is this natural thing. It's no setting, as far as I can tell. It just immediately happens when you're taking a photo in the dark. Mm-hmm. And it uses the ultra wide lens and the ability for that thing to capture a ton of light to instantly enhance and brighten that photo in a way that looks really natural and good. So because of that, I think that this ultra-wide lens is a really great thing. I have this feeling that most people that are just normal iPhone users are not changing between the cameras. Like my wife has a iPhone 10, and it has the telephoto lens, obviously, and she never, ever, ever goes to 2X. And then the same thing, I have another friend who is in a similar situation. I think that most people want to just pull out the camera and take a photo. And this two lens combination is going to make the just taking a photo experience way better, where the telephoto lens could not necessarily do that. So it makes sense. I think it's great. I don't know how often people will actually use the ultra wide, but that's not why it's on this phone. And so I think it's going to make some really nice looking photos as people start just using. They used a phrase, and this came up more with the iPhone Pro. But they used a phrase that was like camera system, I think is the phrase they kept using.
They've been using that for a few years with multi-lens. That's what the whole integrated multi-lens thing is referred to as.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is what it is. You can't really look at the ultra wide and think of it as a camera. You have to think about it as a tool in part of this camera system. And that's going to be really good. And it's going to make some good photos, I think, for people without having to worry about it at all.
They also did a lot of video demo with the regular iPhone 11. And I found a lot of that video quality really impressive. They also added a new software feature for shooting video, which, oh man, I really hope this is coming in iOS 13. Like, I hope my phone is going to get this. It's called Quick Take, where if you're taking stills, if you hold down the camera button, it will switch to video. And then when you let go, it'll save the video.
Which that's great.
Is amazing. So, but they showed a lot more like professional quality video and it was really interesting that I think that they chose to demo video so extensively with this phone. The next phone, it makes sense that they were going to show it being used in professional settings, but they made it seem like people are going to be able to shoot pretty unbelievable looking handheld video with the sort of everyday everyone phone. And the front-facing camera can also it shoot 4K video. They said 30 frames per second, but then they said it could do slow-mo. So I'm not quite sure what that's about. But the really pretty funny video that they did was to try and coin the term slow-fies for selfie videos shot in slow motion, and I do think people will use that a lot. I will definitely never shoot one of those, but I think that there are people who will be posting them all day.
Right.
The performance gains are as you would expect from a next generation iPhone processor. It's the fastest CPU and graphics that have ever been in a phone. And, you know, they went on to demonstrate that with a crazy mobile game from China. And all of this, and they managed to get one more they managed to get one more hour of battery life than the 10R gets. And the 10R already was just like the most smoking battery in the whole history of the iPhone. And they get one more out of the iPhone 11. People are going to notice that, and it's going to be awesome. But that's not the kicker. The kicker is they lowered the price of this phone by $50. It starts at $699. And that's like back into reasonable iPhone price territory, I feel like. That's what the 8 Plus cost last year. And it's $50 less than the XR cost. So good for them. But I think that that's an indication that they're not going to sell. They know they're not going to sell as many. So they're trying to keep the unit numbers up by lowering the price, because they know revenue is not going to look good no matter what they do.
Yeah, you might be right. So, yeah, I mean, these are great phones. I care about the Pro models, so we should talk about those.
Yeah, right. So the phone that Drew's going to get was the next phone announced. It was the first phone that they appended the word Pro to as they slowly marched towards Apple product names being comparable across product lines, finally. It's a sensible division now. iPhone 11 and iPhone 11 Pro, you know the difference between those two versus 11 or between 10, sorry, X, as most people would call it, XR and XS. So we're back into sane land as far as naming. And the iPhone 11 Pro was the first time Phil Schiller came on stage, which I thought was interesting. It has some similar design elements to the XS line from last year, with the steel body with a glass fronted back, but the back has a matte coating, grippy matte coating now, which I think is going to look super cool. And they've also added to the space gray, silver, and gold finishes a midnight green finish, which is really interesting. I like the idea of colors on a Pro phone.
I don't know if I would call this a color, though. I mean, it is more color than black or white, but it's pretty dark. I mean, it's not a fun color by any means. It's cool, but it's interesting to see that the 11 is the only one that gets the fun bright colors still.
Yeah. That's fair. Everybody knows that if you want to get the party phone at the top of the line, you get the gold, as I did.
Yes.
But it's interesting, Midnight Green. So what? What are you going to get?
I don't know. I mean, I did just start a business called Evergreen, so it feels like I need to get the Midnight Green phone. But typically, I would just get the black. And I mean, matte black is like my thing, so
yes.
I might have to go for that.
So 458 pixels per inch, crazy, crazy screen. They said the phrase extended dynamic range and compared it explicitly to the Pro Display XDR announced for the Mac Pro. And so they called this screen the Super Retina XDR display. I have a feeling that this is going to be pretty shockingly beautiful to look at in person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's going to be one of the key differences. I mean, like the iPhone 11 is still, not an OLED screen, but that's going to be the, you know, the least of the comparisons between those two screens now, because this is going to be so bright and so clear. If it really does, as I would expect, like this is how Apple does this kind of marketing. I would expect that if they're going to call it XDR, that means that if you cut a rectangle, the shape and size of an iPhone 11 Pro out of the screen of the Mac Pro, the pixels would look identical. Like it's going to be the same screen, and that's just insane. Mm-hmm. So congratulations to you on your new screen. What followed after that was probably the most boring, nerdy segment in Apple keynote history, as somebody explained all of the different components and machine learning accelerators and blah, blah, blah.
I had genuinely already forgotten about it by the time that you brought this back up. It was very bad.
This was the one really, truly bad part of the keynote. It was just impossible to listen to because the guy's voice was shot too. So it was very rough. But the punchline is apparently they still managed to lower the power consumption of the processor of this phone. I don't understand how Apple still manages to squeeze efficiencies out of what they're doing as they make these things so much better. But it lowered the power use despite it having more pixels than any phone ever. And it now they are reporting 4 hours more than 10S, 5 hours more than 10S max, which is
great.
Really welcome, because I find the 10S battery life to not at all be good enough. And they, to boot, have thrown in the 18-watt fast charge plug in the box. So no more tiny brick that barely charges these monster phones. So good news on the battery front, even for the Pro phone. I'm not sure how that compares. Because of the stupid way they do battery life comparisons, I don't actually remember how much better the 10R was than the 10S. And so I don't know whether they're the same. I think they would have just said they're all the same if they're the same. So I imagine it's still slightly worse than the 11 is going to get. But four or five more hours. I mean, obviously, those are marketing claims. It's never really that much. But that's a big jump for them to report. So I think it's going to be noticeable.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And then the camera. The camera is the camera that I desire. And it's a weird thing. There was some belief that this iPhone 11 Pro would have some features that it eventually did not, and in fact were like debunked the day before it came out. Weird features like the ability to charge your AirPods or watch from the back of the phone, to do that like reverse charging thing that I think Samsung phones have. A few other things like that. There was a lot of big deal made about specific chips and what that might mean for like augmented reality. And Apple didn't really talk about any of that. They just talked about the camera a lot and made it very clear that this phone was about the really, really good display and the really, really good camera. And thankfully, I am a person that really, really cares about both of those things, specifically the camera. So this is a phone for me. And what's nice about this camera system, as we talked about before, is that it has that ultra wide, the traditional wide, and then a telephoto lens all working in harmony. And that means that you can do some really cool stuff. I'm very thankful to report that the entire UI of the camera is totally changed and it looks very good. I've been trying to like look at all of the screenshots that they shared, because they didn't really go into crazy detail about what the new interface is like. But it seems like there's just going to be tons of features that make it way easier to shoot really good photo and video. Specifically, there's like changes to the way that they do HDR and auto adjusting The Focus, and of course stuff like that Night Mode that we talked about with the 11. It's all stuff that's really, really good, and they're making it much easier and more obvious to change between these different cameras. Like I mentioned before, how I said that I know some people who have never really used that second lens on the iPhone 10. One of the people that I talked to when I suggested that he use the telephoto lens, and I said, you should hit the 1X and change it to 2X. He assumed that was just zooming in, mm-hmm. like the wide angle, because that's how it's been for so long. And so to actually make it very clear exactly what you're getting with both how big of a shot you're taking and what kind of aperture you're getting is going to make it much more clear for people who actually care, and also much more understandable for people who don't really care. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of big gains in this camera as a whole, both the hardware and the software. There were some interesting features that I felt like weren't demoed necessarily incredibly well, but seemed great. There was talk of a new software update feature called Deep Fusion that seemed like a bracketed HDR type thing where it takes a ton of photos and smushes them all together, which is not anything new, but the fact that it's kind of just doing it for you and producing really good photos with a camera is awesome. I just don't think they necessarily proved to the audience in front of them that that was such a big deal as they were hoping to.
Yeah, they showed a kind of mediocre looking photo that had lots of little details in it. And he was like, how did we get this picture? And then he explained. I think that there were a few words that gave away that it's more than just dynamic range. So the reason it's a big deal is because it's the first time that machine learning has been put to work on the image data itself on the fly like this. And he said it optimizes for detail and low noise. And I think that what he means is it's going through 9 images, 4 of which are taken at all times, and then 1 when you click the shutter and 4 after you click the shutter. Using the data in those images, it's crawling through all of the pixels and it's trying to pull out details and it's trying to reduce blurriness and noise, which is definitely a higher level kind of computation that requires recognizing what's in the picture, not just bringing light and color levels into better balance. It's actually going to clean it up, which does sound cool, but it's very hard to demo, I would think.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, all of it is awesome. My favorite part was I texted you and said, this feels like it's just made for me. They had Filmic Pro come out and demo some of the really crazy features that you can do if you really, really care. And the demo was led by a director named Sean Baker, who's one of my favorite directors, who shot a movie called The Florida Project. And then before that, shot a film called Tangerine completely on the iPhone. And when I see people complaining and griping about Apple positioning these things as pro level, Sean Baker is an incredible example of somebody who is a professional that really does use the tools. He's an indie filmmaker who was trying to find a way to film an entire movie with a limited budget and opted and realized that he either had money to pay a really good crew or money to buy or really good money to rent very good equipment. And so he opted to buy 5 iPhones and the crew and shot an entire film using those iPhones instead of having to shell out all the money for professional film equipment. And mm-hmm. The film is incredible. It's so good. You do not look at it and say, this is filmed on an iPhone. And the Florida Project movie, because it takes place in Florida, there's a scene in Disney World and he covertly shot the entire scene on an iPhone with, everybody acting in the park without having to notify Disney that there was a film crew filming. So there are reasons for these phones to exist. And, there are major directors that are using phones for filming and saying, this is just better in every way because I have so much more control over this little screen, this little camera than I would with a traditional system. So there are reasons for this. And Sean Baker came out and demoed a really, really cool idea that the iPhone 11 Pro allows for, which is simultaneous shooting between all of the different cameras at once. So instead of having to decide which lens you're using, you can just use all of them. including the front-facing camera, which he said would be really cool to like film a conversation between two people and then just stick the iPhone in the middle of them and let the actors be captured from both sides of the iPhone. So it was rad. Like, it was really, really cool. And I am somebody who is personally using the iPhone as a video camera and a creative project that I'm doing on a regular basis. And I can't wait to see what kind of gains I can get from the iPhone 11.
Yeah. And even in the regular camera app, they were describing how when you're shooting video, and that's like full 4K, 60 frames per second, extended dynamic range, crazy video, whichever lens you're using, the other camera lenses are primed for focus and stuff like that. So that when you switch to the other lens, it doesn't have to like zoom in and like, you know, adjust the white balance, you know, on the, like, it knows what you were shooting before and it will switch cleanly to the other lens while you're filming, which is impressive. And really extends the capability of just using one iPhone, to shoot more complex, interesting stuff.
I love it.
The optical zoom range for the iPhone 11 Pro is now 4x. It goes from 0.5x to 2x. And, I mean, it's just, it's really only deserving of the name Pro in a literal sense in terms of the cameras. But I think that they've more than proven that, as a camera, as a film and photography device, this is a Pro device for sure. And I expect this branding to stick around even when the numbers go away. Like, you can clearly imagine. So a rumor, just to throw in, a rumor has it that there will be a new iPhone SE, this spring. It's expected to be an iPhone 8 style device. So the 4.7 inch screen that's, you know, was around for many years and is still really popular with the home button and everything, but it will do to the iPhone 8 what the iPhone SE did to the iPhone 5S, so that it will refresh a very popular form factor that makes it last another few years. But you can definitely imagine after that, a phone that brings in the bezels, but keeps that 4.7 inch screen, or maybe has a slightly different screen size, but then there would be four iPhone sizes. And then you can see that it's already in line with the iPad line, and you can have iPhone mini, iPhone, and iPhone Pro, and the Pro is in two sizes. And I don't know what they'll do about Air, but I doubt there will be an iPhone Air. But other than that, you know, when they drop the numbers, I think it makes perfect sense. iPhone mini, iPhone and iPhone Pro, iPad mini, iPad, iPad Pro. And, you know, I bet that iPad Air is not going to last forever anyway. So, you know, this is iPhone naming back on track. And the Pro moniker does indicate something about the pricing, which is that while the iPhone 11 reduced the price from the XR that it's replacing, the iPhone 11 Pro is staying at the same price point as the XS line, at $999 and $1099, respectively. The XR will still be available at $599, which is a pretty astonishingly good price for a phone of that quality. And the iPhone 8 will still be around at $499. So that's the line.
Hello, internet friends. It's Drew, and I want to tell you about Keyhouse. There's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut that I read tucked away in an essay he wrote about the seasons, where he said that he thought that the idea of four seasons was a lie. Instead, we should have six. Fall doesn't move to winter, and winter doesn't move to spring. Instead, he thought the season should be like so. Summer, fall, locking, winter, unlocking, and spring. I believe there's a beautiful poetry to the idea that creation itself requires a time of unlocking before anything of substance can bloom. And perhaps you're listening to this message right now, stuck between what you're doing and what you want to do for the rest of your life, realizing that you might be in that cruel season of unlocking too. Find your own space for unlocking. Go to Keyhouse, KEYHOU.SE, and let's find the key.
And that's the event, too. I mean, there was a retail section at the end for some reason. I think the only reason was that Deirdre O'Brien had never been on stage in her new role as head of retail.
And that it seemed like they couldn't really say what things were happening until hardware release dates were unveiled. So
yes, I suppose that's true.
That seemed like the reason. But it was kind of a weird flat note for the entire thing to end on. Not that it was bad. It just was not in any way, shape, or function a one more thing that people always cross their fingers for.
Yeah. So there was such a thing rumored for this event. Maybe we'll see it next month at an October event that may have iPads and stuff too. You know, I'm sure that one will be fun for us as well. But that, I think, about does it for the September event.
So are you not going to get an iPhone 11?
No, sir. I'm going to keep this phone. I have upgraded my phone two consecutive years for the last year. Wait a minute. Let me think. I had a 6S, and then I got an 8. So I skipped the 7, and then I got a 10S. So, yeah. So that's right. But that's 2 years in a row, because the 8 was the same year as the 10. I am unsatisfied with the 10S. I will say that. It does not have enough battery life. It does not, it like runs so hot it hurts my hand sometimes. But it's not like in poor shape by any stretch. Like, it still performs perfectly.
Yeah.
And in most situations, the camera is doing what I want it to do.
Right. And beyond the battery life, which, you know, would be better, I don't know if any of the other stuff will be solved by the 11 Pro. So
no.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if these phones are a big enough deal for me to recommend to normal people. I know that as a person that takes a lot of photos and videos, I definitely want a Pro. I don't think I would recommend a Pro to anybody else in any other circumstance. And I don't know if I would necessarily recommend the 11 over the 10R. The 10R was such a good phone. Yeah. And I feel like it's a testament to the quality of Apple products in a way, that I'm not saying that these phones are bad. I'm just saying that the last few years' phones have been so good that if you have that, I don't think that there is anything in this phone that would necessarily grab you and make you feel as if you need this new one. If you're up for an upgrade, this is a great time. I know somebody who is using an iPhone 6. They should probably get one of these.
Yes, they should.
But other than that,
but they should probably get an 8 for $499.
Well, I'm so anti-button at this point. I want everyone to embrace the non-button. But in any case, I mean, yeah, these phones were perfectly good updates to the iPhone 10 system that they've been working on for the last few years. And I personally am excited about the gains that the camera system is making. But that kind of was it. And I think that there will be people that are a little disappointed in this year's iPhone updates, because they're looking for the killer feature that we got so used to seeing every year, year after year with iPhones. And that just doesn't seem like it's coming anymore. And I think that's fine. I don't think that that's necessarily something that Apple needs. You know, cough, subscription, cough. Like, there's a reason why they're changing their tact and changing the ways that they lock you into the Apple ecosystem. But it's a curious time to be watching these keynotes and expecting some major event, you know, some major thing that had not leaked, and not getting it. We knew exactly what phones we were getting before this event, and they gave us exactly that and no more, no less.
You make an interesting point about recommending the 11. I last year I recommended the 10R. People would say, I haven't gotten a new phone in a long time. I really want a new iPhone. Should I get the 10S or something? And I recommended the 10R in all cases, and they were like, isn't it not as good? And I would say, no, it's almost exactly as good, and it's way less expensive, and it's probably got a better balance of what you want. And people who wanted to step down to the 8, I would say, no, get the 10R. It's so much better. It's not that much more money in the grand scheme of things. Like, just get the 10R. And everybody was happy with that recommendation. And it seems like the world was happy with that recommendation and really bought the hell out of the 10R. This year, I would probably still recommend the 10R to the people I was recommending the 10R to. Like, I'm not right. sure that the 11 goes up in a way that's meaningful to those people, even though it's $100 more. I think the 10R is still going to do the job for most people. And for me, you asked whether I was going to upgrade. Like, I think I'm actually falling off the Pro side. I think that's why I'm not upgrading this year, is that I'm actually sliding down more towards the middle of the line. And I find the 10S size to be too small. I want more reading space on the screen, but I'm not going to get an 11 that doesn't have an OLED screen, because the best use case, if you ask me, for OLED screens is for reading in, at night in bed with a black page, which I do all the time. And I'm not going to get the big Pro Max phone. Like, that's just not, I can't justify that. So, like, I think I'm probably a customer for the iPhone 12. If rumors are true, when that the middle phone is going to go OLED also. And I would sacrifice a little bit of camera stuff for the compromises that device makes. And it's not there yet. I'm not going to get the 11 for the because of the screen.
I'm with you. I understand.
So, yeah, it's going to be a weird year. It's probably not going to be a big sales year for the iPhone. Across the line, I mean, I think that it will, they will sell a lot of iPhones this year. I just don't think it will be a lot of flagship iPhones. And maybe that's okay if they can get everybody hooked on their services.
That sure was an event. That's how I feel about it.
It was. And we may be back for another special in a month for the next one.